You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Hey, it's Brother One.
And Brother Two.
From Two Brothers Mattress. You'll spend 33% of this year on your mattress.
That's almost 3,000 hours.
Start sleeping comfortably on a new Serta mattress.
Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
With our lowest price guarantee
and our 100-night trial,
your locally owned Two Brothers mattress is your number one choice in Serta mattresses. Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
Twobrothersmattress.com.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor. And today we have with us Army Major Wes Porter. Wes, how are you doing this morning?
I'm really good, thanks, Jenny. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, we're excited to have you here. So I only know a few things about you, but I'm excited to learn more. We know you're in the Utah National Guard as an Army major. You're the operations officer for the Triple Deuce down in Cedar City. We know you also work in government operations for the state of Utah. But we're about to find out that even though your military assignment's down in Cedar City, you live in a different part of the state. So I'm wondering if you can introduce yourself to us a little bit and kind of tell us who you are.
Oh, sounds good. Yeah, so I live out here in Bernal, Utah, out here in Dinosaur Land in the Uinta Basin. A little bit about me, I'm originally from San Diego, California, but my grandfather moved me here when I was very young, about I think 5 or 6, so a long time ago. And the intent behind that was to really start a new life in a place where he felt I had the best opportunity to grow and to learn to be a good person. And for some reason, and my grandpa passed away years ago, about 20 years ago, but nobody in my family asked grandpa why Bernal, Utah. Zero family.
So it won't do me any good to ask. Because there's no answer.
Right. I've got nothing for you. I asked my mom and my aunt. I asked my grandma, and they all really don't know why. But he spent his savings on this little single-wide trailer out in a rural part of Bernal. So there's actually rural parts of rural Utah.
The rural version of rural?
That's right. Next to the Green River out there. And that's where we came. That's
okay, so tell me, you say we went to Bernal. Was it just you and grandpa, or were your mom and the aunts and everybody else involved?
Just me and grandpa. So, you know, he brought me out there. And I think a few years later, my mother decided to come out with some of my brothers and some of my siblings, and then my aunt. And eventually, even his son moved out to rural Utah. So he had 3 kids. All of his kids followed him. And most of them are still here in Bernal today without any idea of how we got here.
Okay, that is hilarious. Because Bernal, Utah, unless you know about it, really is not exactly on everyone's tourist destination list.
Yeah, no one accidentally comes to Bernal,
for
right?
Sure.
You have to be deliberate about it.
All right, so Wes, tell us a little bit. I know you're in the Guard. I know you work for the state. Tell us about what your family makeup looks like now. You say you still live in Bernal.
Still live in Bernal, yeah. So, you know, Bernal is one of those places that always brings you back. And so I got married. I went, you know, grew up. Went on a mission, met my wife here in Bernal. We got married, started a family together, moved down to Cedar City to go to college. And I joined the military down there. Anyway, through all of those different things, through deployments, through good education, ended up back here in Bernal with me and my beautiful wife, Emily, and our 6 kids here in Bernal.
And okay, so that's a lot of kids. How old are the kids?
So I have a big range from 17 to 4.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
That's about the range of my kids. I've got 17 to 5.
Yeah, we're right there. So that's
all right. So tell us, Wes, it sounds like you've got an upbringing where your grandpa's taking you completely off the grid for a new start at life. You've joined the National Guard. You're married with 6 kids. You've been deployed. You've done a lot of things. I imagine you've had some pretty good experience with resilience. So we would love for you to tell us what resilience looks like to you.
You know, for me, and I put a lot of thought into this, something I've learned really just recently is, I would say my overall definition of resilience probably isn't that much different than most people's, right? It's keep moving, absorbing hits. But what I've learned, for me, the technique is learning when to take a knee. And what I mean by that is, you know, going back to my grandfather, he taught me that when you do something, you dive in and you do all of it and you work through it. And as I've gone through my life with that, the reason why I went to school is because I needed to go to school. That was it. It wasn't this huge passion. It was something you had to do, so you do it. So you dive in and you figure it out. I always wanted to serve, so I didn't know much about the military, but I dived in and we figured it out. What I've learned by doing that, and I think a lot of people are like that, is that it takes an emotional and physical toll. And it wasn't until probably my late 30s where I realized you got to take a knee, Wes. You got to take care of yourself. And what's interesting is that seems like it's not being resilient when you take a little bit of a break. But what I found is when I've done that, I've taken care of myself, whether it's mental health, whether it's physical, whether it's taking a time out with the family, I'm able to actually absorb more of those hits that life throws at me. And by taking care of myself and by taking care of my loved ones, and if that means taking a quick pause in whatever you're doing, that's really been able to get me and my wife and our family over some of the obstacles that we faced, whether it was deployment, whether it's for having babies without me even in the country. That's what's allowed us to get over it and really progress in a way where we're more resilient now than we were before.
Okay, I really love that. And I love that you pointed out that it might almost sound contradictory to say being resilient is taking a knee, because sometimes I think we think being resilient is just charging forward and just taking it all and this fierce independence, and I'm just going to grin and bear it, when in reality, maybe the most resilient thing some of us can do from time to time is take a knee. I think that's beautiful. You mentioned deployments, having a bunch of kids, all these things. Can you share maybe a couple of personal experiences of difficult times or challenges you faced and how kind of that attitude of taking a knee applied and got you through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first deployment was in 2011. It was with Operation Ladon. We went with the Deuce to Iraq, and we were really in charge of kind of closing Iraq down. So this is right towards the end of everyone leaving for the most part, at least the conventional forces. And what was interesting is one day, and it's super hot over there, middle of summer, one day I just wasn't feeling very well. And I felt like someone grabbed me in the back of my neck, just really, really hurt. And within a matter of 20 minutes, I went from not feeling that well to having a massive fever and a chill at the same time.
Oh, no.
And I put on a coat. This is in Iraq. I put on my coat. I put on my long johns and a beanie and glove. And I walk over to the troop medical clinic. And before I passed out, I remember the doctor, the great surgeon, go, "Oh, there's something wrong with this guy." And then I passed out.
And then that's it.
And what happened was there was this bacterial kind of viral infection like Giardia in our water. And we drank it.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we all got sick.
Oh, and my goodness. The whole troop?
The whole group of us. And there wasn't that many of us in that time.
Wow.
And to include my commander, I was just a young lieutenant at the time, to include some of the soldiers I worked with, I was one of the ones that got it the worst. And I remember these flashes of trying to make it to the restroom just to be sick and then trying to make it back and seeing soldiers really just lying in the dirt. And if you could stand up, a soldier will come pick you up, hose you off, and bring you home, put you in the bunk. During this time, I was able to have decent conversations and multiple conversations with my wife. But then I'm off the grid for about 10 days. During those 10 days, my wife has our fourth child, Kalea, my little girl. And so I have no idea what's going on. For some reason, she can't get a hold of me. And you can imagine some of the different things that are happening where she's like, "Why isn't my husband calling me? He said he would call me and he's not doing it." Well, what I found was I probably could get the muster, the strength to go and talk to her, but you're really just crawling over there. You're absolutely sick. What I found is I can't do anything or help emotionally my wife until I'm actually able to burden some of the burden that she may have. And I have no idea I have a baby at this time. So the week later, I finally get on a type of Zoom call that they had back then. And she's like, "Where have you been?" I was like, "I'm so sorry. How have you been, sweetie?" And she raises up this kid. I was like, "Okay, so you've been busy." And what I found is,
oh my goodness,
it was just like that. So, you know, days afterwards, and I realized that I actually had the energy to absorb that and to able to take that as being a kind of an absent father at that time. But I took care of myself where I could. I just wasn't ready to talk to anybody physically. But when I was, we were able to have a really deep conversation and meet my child and move forward. And that's one of the stories that I can't imagine
the terror on your wife's side going back and forth between angry that she can't get a hold of you and terrified she can't get a hold of you because you're at war. And that's right. A little bit worrisome for mama at home.
As I told her, you know, we have a rhythm, right? I call her every couple of days at this time. We had our rhythm.
Yeah.
And I wasn't
and you got out of it.
I wasn't able to go there. So she was upset. But that went over real quick because we were able to have the energy to talk and to be my child. And that's really what stuck with me. If I went and tried to talk when I was super sick, I wouldn't have been able to be a help. I would have been a distraction. I wouldn't have been able to provide some of that energy that she needs, right?
Right.
As a new mother, husband, even if it is over a Zoom call.
Right.
And that's stuck with me as I've gone through my career.
Okay, that's a great life lesson, and kudos to your wife.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient.
We both have several of these blankets in our homes for us and our families to get through those cold winter nights.
Oh, Minky makes the softest, most indulgent blankets.
And you know I feel they make the best gifts.
Any time of year, doesn't matter. Everybody loves a Minky.
Visit Minky in-store or online at minkycouture.com. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today.
How many of the kids' births were you in town for? Any of the six? Did you miss them all?
In town for four of them.
Oh, good. So okay, the majority.
Yeah, I was in 2018-19 and had my youngest. She had my youngest while I was gone.
Oh, wow.
I almost made it back. I was able to get on emergency leave. I almost made it back, but I missed it by about 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, that's so sad. Okay, but you were there kind of in that aftermath to help take care of her and the baby.
Yeah,
and good.
Days and then I headed back out. So I saw him again about 9 months later. He got super fat, baby.
All right. So I love that personal example of resilience in your military career. You're an Army major. You mentioned the Deuce. I know that to be the Triple Deuce, which of course is the 222nd in it's a National Guard unit in Cedar City. How do you as an Army officer incorporate resilience into the training you do with your men? Because I look at the military's, you have to be resilient. And yet we hear a lot of stories where soldiers really struggle, or maybe the veteran after the service is having a hard time. And of course, you've been to war and you've missed the birth of your children and you've had difficult experiences. Talk to us a little bit about you as the military leader. What does resilience look like in your training and leadership?
So when we talk about resilience, especially in training, one thing that really stood out to me that I learned a number of years ago, we're working with some special forces individuals. And I remember observing, not with them, working for them, but I remember observing these two officers kind of have this conversation. It was more of an argument. And this individual said, "No, my people are going to get some sleep. Sleep is a weapon." And I didn't really understand it at first, but what stood out to me over the years, especially as I progressed, is that the integration of self-care into the training, into your operational planning, and into your campaign planning is really the force multiplier for a mission accomplishment. In other words, if you build into your training spots, not just your normal sleep cycle, but spots where you're able to see and help individuals during the fight, whether that is taking a knee, whether it's having a conversation, whether it's making sure they're hydrated, whether it's making sure that they get a break to really talk about what's going on in the after-action review, incorporation of those type of best practices is a force multiplier, and our training actually in the Utah Army National Guard starts to reflect that over the last 5-6 years or so, where it's integrated in what we do. So we always ask the question, mission accomplishment, what's our left and right limits, how do we view the concept of the operation, and then we always ask this, how do we make sure that our soldiers are getting what they need to accomplish the mission, whatever that might be, and to include mental health. And as that culture shift happens inside the military, that's actually having a crossover event for those individuals that retire from the military, for the veterans. And what we're trying to do is that holistic approach to start that self-care integrated into our training as a soldier, so they're able to see that, incorporate it, recognize it when they get out as veterans.
I love this.
Me too.
It's exactly what you just shared with us in your own personal story. You were at a place where you didn't have anything else to give. You needed to take care of yourself first. And if you didn't take care of yourself first, you didn't have anything to offer your wife. And honestly, as a wife, I think I would be more concerned with my husband in a war zone.
I'd be terrified in that you've got some bacterial infection
and that you're weak and you're so weak you can hardly communicate. That would be really disturbing. And so sometimes we do need to like take back and just recoil, and we don't really need to explain it to anyone.
Yeah.
Right? We need to put ourselves first. I love this story, and I love to hear that the military is incorporating it into their training. And I love that sleep is a weapon. It's a weapon in both ways,
both
right?
Both directions, for
because
sure.
Deprivation
is its own weapon.
Is its own weapon to the detriment.
Yeah.
But good sleep sets the foundation for health, for repair, for it just is a reset, yeah. right?
Hey, so I'm curious, Wes. I'm with Michelle. I love hearing that this is the cultural change and we're having these conversations. I love that you're integrating self-care into training and planning rather than it's kind of this sidebar. I'm curious, how is it going? How is it being received?
So it is. So here's one of the challenges we have. We go to basic training, we do all these different things, and we train on how to operate without sleep, right? One of our sayings is drink water, change your socks, and drive on. Hydrate, make sure your feet are good, and then you just keep going and moving. That is an absolute necessity when it comes to war. Our soldiers, sure. you know, America's warriors, sailors, Marines, airmen, I think Guardians is what they're called now. Sure. They all have to have that. The trick is that as you move up through the ranks, to apply that tactically and strategically into the actual planning process. But it's a cultural shift. And so a lot of the times we focus, especially young officers, young planners, we focus on just being hard, right? You know, I could go umpteen
Tough
times
guy.
Without sleep this morning, but we have to change that moving forward. And so a lot of this too is really, it's one of the lines of effort that we have for taking care of soldiers inside the National Guard. They'll go do a training with active duty and come over. We're trying to change that culture. But I get a bunch of brand new soldiers where they think what they've seen on TV, what they experience in basic training is how it moves forward. That's their design as a disciplinary effect to allow us to do things that are out of our comfort zone and allow us to know that we can do things. The challenge is we can't plan to do those things when we don't need to.
Right.
And that's some of the challenges that you've seen, you know, overseas is like, yeah, we were trained to do it so we could do it. Well, do we have to do it? I mean, yeah. I can operate.
Do we have to do it just to prove we could be that tough? Yeah. Is that our best practice?
And that's what we're trying to change, right? Do we need to run 96 hour ops? I mean, do we have to do it?
Sometimes it's great to know that you're capable of it should the need arise. I love that. But do we have to do that all the time just on principle? All right, Wes, we're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation about resilience in practice. We'll be right back.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient.
We both have several of these blankets in our homes for us and our families to get through those cold winter nights.
Oh, Minky makes the softest, most indulgent blankets.
And you know I feel they make the best gifts.
Any time of year, doesn't matter. Everybody loves a Minky.
Visit Minky in store or online at minkycouture.com. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Okay, Wes, we've talked resilience in the military, and obviously we could continue talking for years. We've talked a little bit of resilience in childbearing and marriage and that, where you've got those number of kids. Let's talk a little bit about the government work you're doing for the state of Utah, equal opportunity, making sure that those lessons you've learned on the battlefield come home into maybe some of our policies and practices as a state. Where do you see resilience in the day-to-day work you do outside of the military?
That's a really good point. What I've learned from the military is that self-care is important. What I've learned serving the people of Utah is that sometimes self-care isn't enough, that we need to help each other and move forward. And one of the great blessings that I've had is being a traditional guardsman through my career, where you see both sides. And you realize that as you serve a community, you look for opportunities where you can serve to help that community. And a lot of that's by engaging with the different communities. And when you look at some of the great things and direction that Governor Cox has put us on with his administration, to include his roadmap that he built a few years ago and the Utah home, the one Utah that we have now, you're seeing the expansion of opportunity really start taking a strategic center in the direction of how we operate as a state. And inside that framework, it really comes down to, where can we as a government, as a community, reach out and help our community members? Too often we focused on, hey, we're going to do this for the community and here's our intent, and we don't worry too much about the impact, because we say, hey, you know, I'm more worried about the intent. This is what I meant to happen. I know it didn't really work, but I'm going to go off of these good intentions, move forward. We're seeing a shift, and that shift is we're focusing on not just intent, but we're focusing on actual impact. And having that goal has been a and move forward in our strategic planning has been an absolute game changer. because we're very accountable for what we do. So intent and impact is something that I've learned inside this specific role working for state.
Okay, I love that. Intent is important, right? We should be careful with what we intend. But the truth of the matter is, what's the impact of what we're doing? And right. If all we're tracking is the intent, well, our intent could lead us straight to not where we want to be, right? The road of intentions. I think of my husband often. He was also an Army major, and I know he would say he definitely learned so much about resilience and leadership in the military that he then tried to bring home to his political and government service as well. But he and I would talk all the time, and he would say perception is reality. How the person you're serving perceives your intent or what the impact is far more important than what you wanted them to perceive. And your job is to help them perceive things in the way that matches what you're trying to do, because otherwise it's your efforts are just in vain, and then you're going to be exhausted as the person trying to provide service, and I'm going to be frustrated as the person looking for service. And so if we can't align those perceptions and perspectives and come and meet in the middle and say, hey, here's what I intended, and I say, yeah, well, here's what it actually did, is there room for the grace with each other to say, hey, let's do this better? And I agree with you. I see great things happening, not just in our state, not just in the military, but I credit this. You know, we're in a new generation. Like it or not, the pandemic cost us an entire generation. I feel like we've had a generational shift in a couple of years versus 20. But there are some good things coming out of that, how we're viewing things, how we're getting better at talking about things like self-care without it seeming selfish. Mm-hmm. How we're talking about resilience doesn't mean stubborn independence and never asking for help. In fact, some of my best resilience has been able to wave the white flag and say, could somebody else be resilient with me for a minute? Because I just don't have any of my own.
Right. And that is a big part of it.
That human interaction.
But it is a big part of resiliency, right? It's that being able to call it for what it is and being able to ask for help when you need it.
Yeah. Well, and utilize the resources we have. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit. Wes, what do you do with the state? I love the principles and the things you're talking about. Tell us a little bit about your job and your role, both in the intent and the impact.
No, thank you so much. So the full title, it's a long title. I'm not really big on titles, but it's called the EDI Accelerator. And what that is the Equity, Diversity, Inclusion, and Access Accelerator of the state, housed in government operations, specifically for HR. Now, there's a lot going there. And I also am very keen and understand the connotations, even with that the acronym that's there. But primarily my job is to look at policy and procedure and initiatives that help expand opportunity. So I'll give you an example from the HR world, which is something I'm very heavy in. There's always this talk about, hey, we're going to hire for diversity and all these different things. My job is to really hone that down and define what it actually means. And for us, the state, all that means is that we look at preferences, we look at how we hire, and we cast our net wider. That's what it comes down to. And so when we cast our net wider, we look at, for example, we talk about the governor's initiative for having skills-based hiring. In other words, we look at applications and we find the skills that are in there and apply those, as opposed to, hey, Wes has a master's degree, so that's all that counts. No, we look at that history, we look at the skills that this job actually needs, and we find those in individuals. And we cast that net while still holding a very heavy merit-based system, while still holding a very heavy, you know, best qualified system, no compromisation on any of those aspects as per our direction, but it's making sure that all Utahns have an expanded opportunity, which means that sometimes we change how we look. And so that's one of the many initiatives I look at specifically in hiring, but it's all about expanding opportunity and helping those that may have barriers.
I love so many of those words, expanding opportunity, accelerator, like those are all very positive things. You're talking equity and diversity. Let's talk for a second. You and I spoke offline, but it wasn't shared in this portion of the recording. Give us your diversity background. Talk a little bit about your mom, the fact that it was you and your grandpa that went to Vernal and not you and your mom, and then maybe some of that ethnic mix in your beautiful blended family.
No, thank you so much. So my mom, blonde hair, blue eyes, San Diego, California, where she's born and raised. My dad is from Kuamua in Samoa. It's a little island or a little village in Pulu, Samoa. And so I can sum up the first time I knew that I was different in a positive way. I'm riding on the bus. I remember the bus number 56 out here in Vernal, Utah. I'm riding on this bus and a friend of mine was just asking me, that's probably 8, 9. It's like, hey, Wes, what are you? I was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, are you Chinese? He's like, no. Are you Mexican? I said, no. And he lists this entire, he's pretty good at geography. I couldn't do that.
But he didn't know Samoa.
Exactly, right? He listed all those things. And what was interesting, I didn't know that I was from Samoa at the time.
Oh.
Actually, I didn't even meet my father until I was in my 20s.
Interesting.
And so I didn't know how to answer that.
So you couldn't answer him?
I couldn't answer him.
What are you?
And I'm coming home, and that's the day I found out that, you know, what Samoa really was. When I asked my grandfather, he asked me this question. I didn't know how to answer it. Now, couple that. So then I kind of paid attention a little bit that it was a little bit different, but this community is so great, accepted, you know, part of it, absolutely love it. Fast forward on some of the jobs I've had in the military. I was a liaison officer, and I was sent over to Oman to help train some individuals with some artillery planning. And here's me on the plane going, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach them this. They probably need this. I'm going to make sure that I take my experience as a United States officer, United States, you know, I'm obviously biased, and we do things really well. I'm going to help them be better. Not once did I say, I wonder what I can learn from them. Not once did I even take a minute to actually integrate them into my plan,
yeah,
to how I'm going to teach them. And I remember getting to this, it's a really nice institution, me and a couple other individuals. And I get up there and I start saying, okay, here's what you're going to do. All these kind of different things. And they're very nice.
Sure.
I'm working through an interpreter. And then during the break, the interpreter came over. And I said, hey, I'm not getting a lot of feedback. I'm not getting a lot of participation from the group. You know, what's going on? Well, what's wrong with them? Right. I didn't say it like that.
But sure. But you're kind of like, why not? Yeah.
It was like, get your peeps in order. Right.
Right.
Well, what I found out real quick was how I was, the mannerisms in which I was dressing, which would be fairly normal for a normal briefing on stateside with military, was not working inside that culture.
Hmm.
And I actually created, inadvertently, I didn't create the mental and psychological safety for individuals to contribute to the plan. And in not so many words, that's exactly what the interpreter told me. And I was so humbled, humiliated. I felt sad that I would even do that. You know, that's not, that goes against my values as a human being. So I thought, and it started to trail off. And I only had 5 days there. I had to spend the next day and a half building that relationship, repairing that relationship to get us ready for the operation.
Okay. Talk about a life lesson though.
Yeah. It stuck with me. Yeah. I think about it almost every day.
So much of when I hear things, my world is full of raising children, right? That's my primary worry and concern and time sucker. So when I hear you with this, I think of myself as a parent. How often do I go to the kids or the family as the parent with the idea in mind that I have this figured out, here's what you're going to do because I know and I've got this and you're just going to, you know, fall in line. When in reality, how much better could the overall dynamic be when the conversation is more, hey, kids, what do you think? Or, hey, soldiers, what do you think? Or, staff, give me your input. Or, what ideas have you had from your department or your perspective? How much more value is added when even though we have expertise, we recognize we don't have it all?
Absolutely. And go back to the policy procedure, especially
sure.
in the state government, and that intent and impact, right? Too often we say, okay, here's what this community needs, when we really didn't go ask them. We really didn't go into this community and say, hey, what do you think? What do you need? My intent is great. My intent is there to help everyone expand that opportunity.
You just missed one little step. Yeah.
One little step where it's like, hey, what do you think? What do you need? Like, we're all about that. When I talk about diversity, for me, it's really that perspective, right? The different angles to look at things. How do I bring that in? But we teach a lot about diversity. We say, hey, come here, do all these different things. And we forget that we have to actually include people in our decision-making process.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that
and cast the wider
well.
Net.
And that's how I kind of fell in this role. It was an opportunity. I worked in HR, worked in higher education for about 10 years, where I worked with students, both you know, minority students here in Vernal, Utah, were next to the tribe, the Ute tribe. So I was able to work with
awesome.
That community and different things. And it really just started.
So even diversity within your own diversity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just been fantastic. And it really, I saw an opportunity there for me to take some of the lessons that I learned and to learn from other people. I love talking to people. I love talking to different groups, learning about them. And if we can duplicate some of those lessons that I've learned at the state, which we're doing a really good job with some of the wonderful cabinet members we have, some wonderful directors, and of course, BLG and Governor, we're seeing some changes in integration in the community to make Utah us, right? Make all
yeah.
of Utah us. And we're going to get to that point.
Oh, I love it. How beautiful it is when we all come together and bring what we bring and appreciate what others bring. Okay. because you and a couple other guests that we're going to be airing are part of a wonderful organization called Dreams in Motion. So I want you to just take, like, give us the 60-second teaser on that, and then we are going to have kind of a group roundtable recording with all of you one day to get more into the meat of what you're doing. But tell us a little bit what Dreams in Motion is and how you came to be involved with it.
Oh, thank you. So Dreams in Motion is a nonprofit designed to help individuals with their resilience. And we focus a lot we focus on veterans. We focus on individuals that's had large medical issues, to include transplants, people who have had cancer, different things of that nature. We realize, like I said before, self-care is important, but sometimes you need to be able to help other people in their resilience. And it is a symbiotic type of a relationship. And so what we do is we help provide opportunities for engagement with families in the sports area. And so we're able to get tickets with Utah Jazz, and we give them a night at a hotel, and they go sit in the president's box. BYU, they go there and enjoy, and they create, like I said, taking a knee, they create that opportunity where they can take a knee with their family and do that self-care by connecting with them. And a
unique set
away from some of the challenges that they've been facing to take that break. And we've been, I was asked, you know, I know Joe Brown, which you'll talk to, Bruce Tibbetts, the founding members. They gave me a call right away and said, hey, Wes, what do you think about this? I was like, I'm in. Let's do this. And I've been with them since the genesis of the nonprofit. So very excited.
Okay, so this is exciting. So to our listeners, stay tuned. Captain Porter, we are so excited that you shared this with us. Where can we learn more about Dreams in Motion? I imagine there's a website, a Facebook page, maybe all of the above.
Absolutely. It's a Facebook page is what Bruce put together for us. In there, you'll see some of our past recipients of the Dreams in Motion, where they go to the game and we take pictures and we deliver the tickets to them. It's always a surprise, right? We do homework with the board, say, hey, who needs it? And then we nominate individuals. So you can find us on Facebook at Dreams in Motion. You'll see us there.
Okay, this is great. So, and then we're excited to have you come back with Joel, with Bruce, with the whole gang, and tell us a little bit more about what Dreams in Motion is and does, and how our listeners can maybe get involved. Maybe they know someone who could be a benefactor, or maybe they might want to be one of the helpers. So this has been fabulous. Thank you for sharing your great energy with us. I hope someday you're like the high school assembly teacher for my kids, because I love everything you say. I love how you're able to incorporate your experience in military, in government, in education, in family life, in adversity, in good times and bad times, and come out of it on top. And come out of it recognizing that sometimes the best way to push forward is to pause for a second and take a knee. So thank you for sharing all of this with us today. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you like what you've heard, and we hope you'll keep listening with us. Find us whatever podcast platform you use. Don't just find us and listen. Find us and like it. Give us a rating and a review. Help us know how we can improve the show. And especially, maybe consider joining the show yourself. If you're listening and you have a story that you're willing to share about how you've learned what resilience is and some tools and tips along the way, you can contact us either on Facebook at Relentlessly Resilient or Instagram, Relentlessly Resilient Podcast. Just send us a DM or email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com.
Remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.